Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Where is Princess Kate? That's the question on everybody's lips, almost, in the United Kingdom and abroad. Where is the British Foreign Secretary, the Phantom? Number two man in the British government who cannot present himself for questioning before the elected members of the House of Commons for architectural reasons mainly. Where is that pier going? You know, the one being built with the skulls and the bones and the rubble from the destroyed houses in Gaza. Where is little Macron headed? Is he really going to march his legionnaires into Odessa? What could possibly go wrong? Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night because it is the mother of all talk shows.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
Last week, we had record numbers of views, millions of views, for the question, where is Kate? And the story hasn't gone away, you know. In fact, the mystery has deepened. Entirely contradictory photographs have been published, some of them falsified, by Kensington Palace, by unknown photographers, and by a television producer who has produced a video, not just a photograph, of what purports to be the Princess of Wales and the Prince of Wales, the heir to the British throne. Not a fanciful matter because, well, he will be the head of state one day, maybe even one day sooner than we think or hope. The truth is that none of these pictures and none of these videos have been verified by Kensington Palace, by the royal family themselves, yet they have been spun across millions of front pages, across hundreds of minutes of footage broadcast on television. Let's start with the one in the car, not the one where she's turning her head away and you can see the back of her head and you're invited to believe that it is the Princess of Wales leaving for a separate engagement with the Prince of Wales, an engagement he attended on his own. Let's leave that one, park that one to one side. I mean the one through the windscreen, which shows a rather fool in the face, Princess Kate. Not many believed that it really was her. Or, charitably, they thought if it was her, she's been badly affected by whatever medication, steroids or whatever that she is on, because the Kate we remember from Christmas Day, which is the last verified sighting of the wife of the heir to the British throne, was, well, rather more slender in demeanour. And then there was the one that was published in video form, supposedly of the happy royal couple skipping gaily through a farmer's market, though only one person out of all the people there thought to take out their phone and take a picture or a video of that undoubtedly joyous occasion. The problem with it is there is nobody in the land who believes that that looks like the Princess of Wales. Prince of Wales, we can't see. He's got a baseball cap pulled over his face. Could be anybody, could have been me. But the Princess of Wales is in full view in the video, and if it is her, she has changed radically. Not least, she looks at least 15 years younger than the last time we saw the mother of four on Christmas Day. If it is her, the rejuvenating effect of whatever medical treatment she's been having will be much sought after in the future by others. But it's not just that she looks remarkably younger. It is that she looks very different indeed. In fact, the unkind would say, she looked more like the Marchioness of Cholmondeley than she did look like Princess Kate, the Princess of Wales. But that would surely be a step too far. Why would she allow her chum from Cholmondeley impersonate her in a farmer's market, stepping out with her husband? One thing is undeniable. The woman glimpsed through the front windscreen of the car and the woman in the farmer's market are not the same woman. One of those pictures might be true, but both of them cannot be true. Now, everyone and his dog has been warned that a royal announcement is imminent. It was said to be the middle of this morning. Then I thought perhaps the Prime Minister is going to announce something very important when he came into the chamber at 12 noon for Prime Minister's questions. But I knew from his demeanour, a kind of faux levity, and his blue rather than black tie, that he was not about to announce anything of great moment. And so, indeed, he didn't. So we're still waiting for a royal announcement. We know that the Scottish Parliament in Holyrood was advised that there would be a royal statement today of unspecified nature and scope. We know that because that leaked to the Scottish press corps in Edinburgh, but no announcement came. And so we're left still asking the question, what on earth is going on in the British royal family? Why have we not seen an authentic, unfalsified picture of the wife of the heir to the British throne? When will we learn exactly what has happened, either inside Kensington Palace, inside the operating theatre, at the hospital that she unexpectedly attended? They say that it was scheduled, but it was not scheduled, according to her closest aides, people who work with her every day, who had no idea that she was to go into hospital that day. No idea what ailment she has. No idea the state of her health, indeed even her whereabouts. We'll be talking again to David Clues of Unity Network News, who was the proximate reason for the millions of people who viewed our clips on our last show. I've just spoken in the House. I have the dust of the House of Commons chamber on my boots. I spoke on Gaza. I spoke on the Iraq war. I spoke on little Macron's plan to march into Odessa. I spoke on the war in the Red Sea, the danger of a war with Iran, the war in Ukraine. I spoke about the missing foreign secretary. Here is why. We have a situation that we are simultaneously pontificating about the quality of other people's democracy, about the quality of other people's elections, when we in Britain have an unelected head of state, an unelected prime minister, and an unelected foreign secretary. Now, you can tolerate a business secretary like Peter Mandelson being in the Lords whilst being a member of the British cabinet. Frankly, no one much wanted to set eyes on Peter Mandelson. He was better wrapped up in a rodent's fur in the House of Lords. But when you are the foreign secretary of Britain in the midst, in the swirl of the most dangerous international events in my lifetime, certainly since the Cuban Missile Crisis, you cannot have a missing foreign secretary who cannot be questioned by the elected members of the British Parliament, who sits in what is quaintly called another place, which we're not allowed to go into. We never see him. We can't bump into him in the corridor. We can't see him in the voting lobby or in the tea room. And we, above all, cannot ask him questions. Sure, he faces questions by other rodent-wrapped members of the House of Lords, but that's not quite the same thing, because we elected members have to answer our constituents, about Britain's foreign policy without the ability to question the man responsible for it. This is untenable. It is an affront to democracy. Indeed, it is a farce. In tonight's debate, in which I spoke, we literally got into discussing where in the building could a lectern be erected from which the Foreign Secretary could address us, could be asked questions from us. We talked about which direction the microphones would have to be turned or returned into. How would we be able to speak through the chair at one end of the building whilst questioning a man at the opposite end of the building? And the rather leisurely minister who replied to the debate literally quoted the precedents of the 17th century. 17th, not 18th, 17th, not 19th, 17th century. He talked about how there was precedent for bringing to the bar of the House. He mentioned two of them. The Duke of Buckingham's the only one that stayed in my mind, largely because he was called to the bar to answer for his lascivious lifestyle and behaviour, which had affronted the 17th century British Parliament. Must have been pretty lascivious, judging by the standards of the 17th century. He did mention that others had been summoned in the 18th century, including the Duke of Wellington, to answer questions from the members on the Peninsular War. I'm not making any of this up. This was the debate that took place not 1 hour ago in the House of Commons. And he did mention that the last person to be called to the bar of the House to answer questions was a Mr. Juner. I was, I think, alone of all the members present who recall Mr. Juner, John Juner, of the Daily Express, famous for one of my favourite lines. When confronted with Codswallop, he would turn to his missing wife and say, "Pass the sick bag, Alice." And that is exactly how I felt at the end of the debate. 1957, 2024. And we have a missing aristocrat called David Cameron, involved in Gaza, involved in the Red Sea, involved with the preparation for war being made by little Macron, about whom more later in a minute, involved in confronting China in the South China Sea, and none of us can question him as to the wisdom of any or all of these foreign wars in which Britain is, up to a point, embroiled. This is unacceptable in a country that calls itself a democracy and traduces other people's democracy whilst tolerating a farce such as this in our own midst. Let me turn to little Macron. I've stopped calling him little Napoleon because actually Napoleon, whilst short, was a man of substance, a man of stature who left a footprint across all of Europe and indeed farther afield. Little Macron will never be able to do that. He's more a Bourbon Dauphin sitting on his gilded throne in the palace of Élysée in Paris, ordering around imaginary armies. France has no army to speak of. The last time the French army was tested in a European theatre, they folded like a cheap deck chair, allowing Hitler all the way to the Eiffel Tower in record quick time, faster than you could get there in an Uber today. They collapsed like a cheap tent. They cannot successfully prevail against Niger, against Burkina Faso, but they're ready to fight the Russians. I need not mention that the last time the Emperor of France went to Moscow, he had to retreat a completely bedraggled and defeated figure. I could mention the last time the French were in Odessa when they were part of the war of intervention to try and reverse the Bolshevik Revolution of October 1917. they held Odessa until the then nascent Red Army of soldiers and sailors, workers and peasants, including women, cavalry troops, routed the French and drove them from Odessa. The French army today is not what it was in 1920 and 1921. And the Russian army isn't what it was in 1920-21. The difference is the French army is much reduced from then, and the Russian army is super armed, super trained, battle hardened, and will make mincemeat out of any Frenchman or woman foolish enough to be sent by this little Dauphin on this fool's errand to occupy Odessa. Odessa is a Russian city. It is a Russian national treasure, and it will be a Russian city again, whether over the body of Macron's French Foreign Legion or not. We must hope not, for enough people from France, more than any other country, have already perished in this ridiculous but bloody war in Ukraine, a war that need never have been fought, should never have been fought. If it hadn't been for the scuppering of the peace deal arrived at in Turkey, scuppered by Boris Johnson, who he, where he, then none of this would be happening. If France had and others, Germany in particular, had lived up to the guarantor role that they volunteered to take for the implementation of the Minsk II agreements, this war would not be happening. Ukraine would not now be partitioned, along lines still to be determined. All of the east of Ukraine is now and will forever be a part of Russia. The southern coast, including Odessa and linking up with Transnistria, will almost certainly be, before this is over, back in the Russian fold, part of their ancient motherland, leaving a rump state utterly dependent on the European Union and the remains of NATO after President Donald Trump has pulled the United States out of NATO. President Trump is coming. You might not like it. I don't like it. I'm not exultant in any way that President Trump is coming back. But I am exultant that President Biden is on the way out. That much is clear. Short of terminating the presidential bid of Donald Trump, with extreme prejudice, perhaps, a black swan event, a 1963 Dealey Plaza event, a 9/11 type of event, and Ron Paul and General Flynn have both warned in the last 24 hours about such a black swan event, by which they mean an unforeseeable, unexpected event that will change everything utterly in its wake. Short of a successful black swan event, Donald Trump will be back in November. And one of the things he's promising is to pull the United States out of NATO. But if any semblance of NATO continues to exist, if the fools in charge of European governments intend to continue to subsidize the remaining population of Western Ukraine, this rump state that will be left, then it will be a burden and a debt to all of you. Think Kosovo, but think 100, maybe 1,000 times the burden, the weight that Kosovo has turned out to be. We know now that the British general election will be in the second half of the year. These were the words spoken by little Rishi Sunak, the Prime Minister unelected of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. Well, personally, I'm ready for it any time he likes. But I doubt that the so-called opposition, the so-called Labour Party, are looking forward to the fight. Sure, in the national opinion polls, if the false dichotomy is pitched, either Sunak or Starmer, Starmer wins. And he will almost certainly win the largest number of seats in the parliament. But I'm here to tell you that he will face an unprecedented number of unprecedentedly popular and powerful opponents for the Labour votes that he might otherwise have been able to count on. Not just the millions of Muslim voters who will not countenance voting for the genocide Labour Party, which is dripping in the blood of the Palestinian people, blood of tens, scores of thousands of Palestinians, most of them women and children, who've been torn apart with the active support of both the British government and the so-called British opposition. Millions of Muslims simply will not vote for that. Millions of young people who might otherwise have been excited about the possibility of getting the Tories out at last will not vote for it. They will not vote for genocide. And so all the calculations of the British political class are beginning to have to be recalibrated. Keep your seats, fasten your seatbelts. It's Low Key up next on the Mother of All Talk Shows.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
Well, I've just been speaking about him in the highest possible terms. That's because that's how I feel about him. It's Low Key, the recording artist, hip-hop artist of the first rank, host of the Watchdog podcast, and of course, an indefatigable political campaigner. Low Key, welcome back to the Mother of All Talk Shows. I'm wondering if you have a comment to make on the situation now in Gaza, because I hadn't quite known that this pier to God knows where that Joe Biden and his allies are building in Gaza was literally being built with the rubble from the houses destroyed by the Israeli Air Force and other munitions supplied by the United States, and that that rubble literally contained the bones, the skulls of the people who'd been in those buildings before they were reduced to rubble. Now, I was suspicious, like I've no doubt you were, as to what the purpose of this pier was when there's thousands of trucks just through the gate, the Rafah gate that could have been allowed in. But Netanyahu told us today what he thinks the pier is for. It's to achieve the illegal ethnic cleansing of potentially 2.3 million Palestinians out of Palestine altogether to points God knows where. What's your observation on this?
Well, thank you so much for the wonderful introduction. George, I really appreciate it, and I want to congratulate you on your momentous victory in Rochdale. You really put the fear of God into the political elite in this country, and that is something we can all be thankful for. Now, in the case of this port being built on the edge of Gaza, what you had was last week a report pointing out that for a long time, Netanyahu and those around him had seen this as a very good way to control the population in Gaza. We also know that there have been massive deals for oil and gas companies to exploit the resources in and around the Gaza Strip. What we also know is that the US company that is vying for the contract is populated by and staffed by former Defense Department employees and intelligence agency figures from the United States. And the bill is likely to be footed by Gulf states, with one particular Gulf state already offering over $60 million to help with the campaign. And of course, it was also published last week in the Israeli press that there are those within the Israeli political elite who will see it as the perfect subterfuge through which the depopulation of Gaza can be sought in a way which is slightly less scandalous for Israel and its relations with Egypt, for example. We do know that the Sinai Human Rights Organization released footage of camps being set up on the Egyptian side of Rafah with the intention of absorbing large amounts of Palestinians. We also know that the Egyptian government received an increase in the loans from the IMF by over $5 billion. Dollars, in fact, giving some clue as to what that may be for when looking at the massive displacement of human beings, which is imminent in Gaza. So, of course, the port being built on the edge of Gaza will be multi-purposes. And also, we know that the US are sending around 1,000 soldiers to help with the construction of all of this. So this is really a worrying situation indeed, and a further stage in the ethnic cleansing and genocide of the Palestinians in Gaza.
We, of course, will have a change of president almost certainly in November, but not a change of policy if his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, is anything to go by. He said in an interview today, I think, that Gaza is a rather attractive beachfront property opportunity for Israel. And when asked by his interviewer, but would that mean the Palestinians would not be able to go back? He said there's nothing for them to go back to. He encouraged Israel to bulldoze the Negev desert and transfer the Palestinians to there. I'm not saying that Trump will necessarily follow the politics of his son-in-law, but it makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Well, of course, it's known that in the 90s, when Benjamin Netanyahu used to visit New York, he actually stayed in the bedroom of Jared Kushner while he was a young man playing basketball in university. Jared Kushner has performed a vital role for the Israelis in terms of integrating them both economically and even militarily with several Gulf countries. So, for example, the Shaldag unit, which led the first raid on the Shifa hospital, is equipped by a company called the Shlomo Group. This is an Israeli vehicle company. But this company, the Shlomo Group, is owned by something called Affinity Partners. Now, Affinity Partners is Jared Kushner's own initiative that is funded by the Saudi government, meaning you have Saudi money going into currently equipping the Shaldag unit, which raided a Shifa hospital. Extremely scandalous, but that could not have taken place without the hard work of Jared Kushner. What we also have to remember about the Trump factor in all of this is that in 2007, a handwritten note from the Benjamin Netanyahu political campaign was leaked to the Israeli newspaper, which Y.net is its website. Now, this handwritten note had on it the names of potential funders for the Benjamin Netanyahu political campaign. And one of the names on that list, alongside figures like Sheldon Adelson and Rupert Murdoch, which is seriously concerning considering the level of media influence that Murdoch has had in Britain over the decades and around the world for that matter, was of course Donald Trump as well. So the relationship and the kinship and the affinity that exists between Trump, Netanyahu, and that particular Jabotinskyite thrust and manifestation of the Zionist movement cannot be underestimated. And so for the next phases of war that Israel is likely to launch in the region, Biden has gone over and above to demonstrate his fealty to this push by Netanyahu. We can't forget that across this period, the United States has carried out 100 secret arms deals with Israel. Israel has bombed Gaza so much over this period that it is now using ammunition, surplus ammunition from the Korean War in the 50s from the United States. So really, it is a bipartisan orthodoxy in the US, this servility to Israel. So we must be concerned for the days ahead.
Well, a bipartisan servility is, of course, the order of the day here, too, but not hitherto in Ireland. I'm not a fan of Leo Varadkar, the outgoing Taoiseach, Prime Minister of Ireland, but I thought he spoke very powerfully, eloquently, and bravely to the face of Joe Biden about Gaza, about Palestine, in Washington just a couple of days ago. And 3 days later, he has now tendered his shock resignation. Are these two things in any way connected, do you think?
Well, of course, as you will well know, George, Ireland has the claim to being a neutral country. But what does that neutrality actually mean? It means the United States military has free range access and use of Shannon Airport. It means that the Irish military has been involved in training Ukrainian forces in the light of this NATO campaign against Russia. But more worrying than that is something that took place during the reign of Alan Shatter as Justice Minister in Ireland. Now, Shatter is a well-known Israel lobbyist now, but in his previous role as Justice Minister, he went on record as claiming that the the very recording systems that are operated within Irish police stations, the infrastructure used by the elite units of the National Bureau of Investigation, the Criminal Assets Bureau, and other key institutions in the Irish security state were replaced with recorders from a company known as NICE Systems. Now, NICE Systems is a subsidiary of Elbit Systems, which is Israel's largest arms company. So what you have here is a state which is on paper pro-Palestinian, certainly actually having Israeli infiltrated intelligence infrastructure built into it. In addition to that, very concerningly, over the past decade or so, an outfit by the name of Forward Thinking, which has a director by the name of Chris Donnelly from the Institute of Statecraft, who brought us the well-known Integrity Initiative. It has other figures involved in it who are either former or, in the case of Chris Donnelly, current British military intelligence. This organization, Forward Thinking, has worked for many years to organize meetings between Likud and Sinn Féin, and those meetings have taken place. This form of normalization and this targeting and the use of Ireland really as a laboratory for a lot of these projects has taken place. So while the political elite in Ireland is being pushed into making pronouncements, you will well remember that this statement being made was something that took place after a campaign calling against Irish politicians from going to the United States on St. Patrick's Day. So while it obviously was an emotive speech which connected with many people across the world, the mere meeting of Biden was really a demonstration of U.S. power in this situation. So it will be interesting to see what happens next in the Republic of Ireland.
Now, you're, of course, a giant figure in show business, in the world of hip-hop and so on. I wanted to ask you your take on the extraordinary events, all in the interests and in the name of freedom, of course, that took place around TikTok in the United States last week, where TikTok has been ordered to be sold to an American company or maybe an Israeli company, maybe both. But TikTok is to be banned in the name of freedom, even though hundreds of millions of views of TikTok from the American public are recorded daily. What's your take on that?
Well, let's remember this, George. A lot of the propaganda around TikTok is aimed at convincing people in the United States that TikTok may be spying on them for a foreign government. Well, let's be clear. The US Department of Defense has its data handled by a company by the name of Oracle. Now, Oracle is the brainchild of Larry Ellison, one of the closest friends of Benjamin Netanyahu. And Ellison actually offered the directorship of Oracle to Benjamin Netanyahu, meaning Netanyahu stood to be the director of the company that handles the data for the US Department of Defense. In addition to that, Larry Ellison is the largest donor to the Friends of the IDF charity, which funnels funds directly into the Israeli occupation forces, in the history of the organization. So you may have some form of an issue with national security, but it's certainly not from the Chinese. And even Nancy Pelosi went on record just a few days ago saying that Netanyahu attempted to interfere in US elections. But also, let's deconstruct these allegations against TikTok. Well, actually, contrary to what they will try and tell you, there has been an attempt to infiltrate and control TikTok, but it hasn't been the Chinese. No, the content policy lead for TikTok Canada, for example, is a gentleman by the name of Alexander Corbeil, who is simultaneously the vice president of the NATO Association of Canada. Another interesting example of an employee at TikTok who is an ex-NATO employee is Ford Copeland. We don't know if he is a relative of the famous CIA man Miles Copeland, but he previously, before working in trust and safety at TikTok, was a desk officer for NATO and the Department of Defense. Now, something which I published myself was the current feature policy manager of TikTok is a gentleman by the name of Greg Anderson. Now, according to his own LinkedIn profile, until 2019, Anderson worked on psychological operations for NATO. After I published information about that, he changed his LinkedIn profile to not mention the psychological operations aspect of his work at NATO. You also have Bo Patterson working as a threat analyst for TikTok's trust and safety division. Now, between 2017 and 2020, Patterson was a targeting analyst for the CIA. What we also know is Victoria McCullough, who previously worked for the Department of Homeland Security and for the White House itself, she now works on trust and safety at TikTok. And another interesting figure at trust and safety at TikTok is Christian Cardona, who spent 13 years in senior roles at the State Department. What we have to see happening with this TikTok is a convergence of different interests. So on one side, you have the war hawks of the US regime who have been seeking for a long time to make TikTok a sacrificial lamb in their propaganda war against China. But what you have on the other side is the Israel lobby. Now, at the beginning of the genocide in Gaza, the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL, which let's not forget, the ADL is so deeply considered to be a proxy of Israel that even the FBI, in an internal memo in 1969, wrote the following words: "It is incredible to assume that information given to the ADL is not furnished to an official of the Israeli government. The ADL, it shares funders with illegal settlements in the West Bank and the friends of the IDF." Now, the ADL came out and said in a private recording which became public, Jonathan Greenblatt, the head of the ADL, said, "We have a Gen Z problem and a TikTok problem," pointing specifically to young people using TikTok to pass around information about Gaza. Now, the ADL has spied for decades for the Israeli government. You have examples of them even spying on Desmond Tutu for the apartheid regime in South Africa. And so this campaign to push TikTok into other hands, we now see the pro-Israel stalwart and Secretary of the Treasury under Donald Trump, Steve Mnuchin, has stated his intention to gather investors under his umbrella to buy TikTok. Now, we don't know if those investors will include his close friend, Yossi Cohen, the former director of Mossad, who Mnuchin previously asked to join his other investment fund. So it's certainly interesting what will happen next. But what we do know for sure is that Israel is seriously concerned with the free flow of information, even in a limited way, as is made available on TikTok.
I told them you were a genius. Low-key, as always, a tour de force. Thanks for joining us on the Mother of All Talk Shows. You can comment on what you've heard so far. It's free, toll-free in the US and Canada, +1-844-944-3344, free of charge in the UK and Ireland, 0808-196-5522, and the rest of the world on 44203-966-2625. I'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
Well, just under 4 million people watched the Mother of All Talk Shows in the last week, and a lot of those numbers came for Kate. They came for our discussion about the big question on the lips of many people in Britain, however they like to pretend they have no interest in the matter: where is the Princess of Wales? Well, David Clues is the man in front of this particular story. He is the lead correspondent of Unity Network News, and he joins us again now. David, thanks for joining us. How would you summarise where this story stands this evening?
Well, first of all, George, thanks again for having me on and for the warm welcome from your audience again. It's just incredible. And I think the media and the royal family are relying on the fact that the vast majority of people just skim the headlines. They don't look deeply into things. As we are now on the 20th of March, it is unequivocal. Kate Middleton hasn't been confirmed being seen in public since the 25th of December. That's the blatant fact. As you rightly pointed out, we've had a flurry of activity over the last 2 weeks, and all of it has been completely debunked and proven to be untrue. You had the Mother's Day photograph that was released that what wasn't just touched up. It wasn't just slightly, you know, some filters put on it. It was a complete fabrication. Before that, you'd had the picture of Kate when she was supposedly in the car with her mother, except she was looking exceptionally bloated. And then at the weekend there, Monday, Sun runs with the story that Kate has been seen at a farm shop with William, and the media are running with this like it's normal. And I'm quite happy to go on record and just say that quite clearly, the young lady in that picture that is with whoever that gentleman is clearly not Kate Middleton. And like she doesn't look anything like Kate Middleton. And you've got a preposterous situation where the head of the BBC disinformation unit, Mariana Spring, is talking about people pushing conspiracy theories. Well, Kensington Palace have not confirmed that this video was Kate Middleton. I have speculated. I mean, look at that photo. That's been put through an AI software to enhance what that person looks like. And it's clearly not Kate Middleton. My speculation on this issue, and I put this out on the night of it, is that the individual involved, a gentleman called Nelson Silva, has worked with two actors, and they've tried to do this because, remember, when the royals visit somewhere, what normally happens? The BBC, Sky, ITV, they'll go around and they'll speak to the shopkeepers, they'll speak to the staff. Oh, how was it? There has been one person gone on record, and we're now supposed to believe the Sun newspaper. Kelvin McKenzie, famously, who was the editor at the time of Hillsborough, said, this video puts an end to the conspiracy theories. This video puts an end to the speculation, when quite clearly it doesn't do anything of the sort.
Well, it certainly hasn't stopped thee and me from speculating. Let's look more closely at the image of Kate in the video. It might look passably like what Kate Middleton looked like when she was 19 or 21. Yes. It does not look at all like the Kate Middleton we saw on Christmas Day, does it?
No. I mean, she is, I believe, is she 41 or 42? Let me just actually find out exactly what age she is. This is somebody that looks clearly, as you say, in their very early 20s. 42, she's 42, in her very early 20s or even younger. I mean, it's farcical that they're trying to actually pass this off as real. It's a gaslighting operation on an incredible level. And as I say, I think people at the BBC, and not that they're reputable journalists, but they know that this isn't Kate Middleton. But I think they'll be working behind the scenes to try and identify who these actors are and what's going on. But the fundamental remains: the royals know about this speculation. They know everything that's going on. This could be solved with a 5-minute video. TV crew, a couple of journalists could go up there. They could interview Kate Middleton in her house. We would then be able to do all sorts of check on the video, run it through AI, and that would be it, finished. And they're not capable of doing that, which begs the question, why not? Why can't the royal family do that?
Yeah, I mean, not capable or not willing. Let's speculate then. Why would rapacious, rat-pack journalism like The Sun, why would they willingly go along with what you say, and I suspect, is a fake video that isn't Kate and isn't even necessarily William? Why would The Sun go along with that?
Well, it's interesting. Someone's just put in the chat, it's as bad as the IDF propaganda. I think we're now in a post-truth stage, and that the Sun have maybe run the numbers that they'll put this story out and they'll make X amount in advertising revenue. And if it turns out it's not true, well, it's paid for itself. And it very much is that IDF model. Well, we'll just lie. We'll just push it out there and it will stick with enough people. And they've maybe just decided to run with that. But it is an excellent point. Apparently, Rebecca Brooks, I believe, let me just again double check that she is still involved in it, but she signed off on it to get it out. And the story that they're putting out as well was that it was $200K payment that was given to this guy, Nelson Silva, that Rebecca Brooks would
still be
the
CEO. That's a lot of money for a grainy video. The Sun would need to ask for that back if it turned out not to be true, although I'm sure the lad took care of that in the contract. But I've asked you about why the Sun would go along with all this. Let's speculate as to why the state would go along with all this. As you rightly say, never mind a video, never mind the BBC going in for a video. Why don't they publish the actual Mother's Day photograph rather than the one that they falsified? Wouldn't that kill the speculation? At the very least, we'd know just how rejuvenated Kate was now looking.
Because there was no Mother's Day photo taken. It was a mishmash of others that as your team are putting up there. You know, it's a Vogue photo that they've used, and they've implanted that within. So there is no original to release. It's completely manufactured and made up. And we said last time I think there's three possibilities of what is going on. Firstly, she's dead, which I think is a bit of a stretch. I don't think that's correct. Secondly, she is in some sort of vegetative or mental state where she's incapable of speaking. Or thirdly, she's downed tools. She has said, I'm not doing any media. I'm not doing anything, which again leaves open to the speculation as to why. And it's a lot of your audience are asking, is accurate, is there a bigger game at play? Because you've had Jeremy Vine today coming out saying, well, maybe we should just shut down Twitter. And you've got all these people saying, well, look at what these conspiracy theories are leading to. So I think there are going to be a lot of elements within the British establishment that will use this as an opportunity to beat people. But look, they are blatantly lying to us, George. This isn't as if they've released a video and again, this would be a bit of a stretch if I was on saying it's a clone or it's someone wearing a mask. That would be a stretch. They are blatantly lying. They've not released a photo or video of her since the 25th of December. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, and obviously one hopes mercifully that if those are the only three options, that it's the third option, that she's down tools. One doesn't wish her any ill health, least of all wish her death. We must hope then that it's just that she's on strike.
Yes.
You know, like the lady at the ticket office in the local railway station, she ain't going to take it anymore. I suppose the question then would be, what on earth would drive the wife of the heir to the throne to down tools?
Well, and again, this is where all the speculation has come in, and there's been a huge amount of speculation. We were discussing in detail the apparent suicide of Thomas Kingston, the son-in-law of Prince Michael of Kent. He went out with Pippa Middleton. I mean, there's a lot of rumours floating around there, and as I say, it's all speculation. William has been a very naughty boy. He's been involved in affairs. Apparently, he does have a very, very bad temper, and there's all sorts of speculation, and fundamentally this speculation could all be put a halt to if the royals came out and were honest with people. And then the amount of people are out, well, just leave them alone. No, the royals are paid for by the taxpayers. They are fundamentally, we are not their property. They are our property, and we deserve to know what what they are doing. But they are treating us with this level of disdain and contempt. But I think the fact that you and I are focusing on it, George, and many more are, I've never known anything like this. I've seen a lot of crazy stuff in the years I've been involved in politics, and especially over the last 6 years, I've never seen anything as crazy as this, especially just the one drama to the other, which again adds fuel to the fire, though, that they're doing this on purpose. And are they actively trolling the British public? Are they wanting people to speculate for certain reasons?
Yeah, I mean, that is, of course, another layer of conspiracy theory, which doesn't mean it isn't true. But when I sat down in the chamber for Prime Minister's questions just before little Rishi Sunak came in to the chamber, I heard the cheering. I could scarcely see him above the table. He's so diminutive. But I knew from the cheering that he'd come in. And when I looked on my phone, I saw that royal announcement was trending. By the time the Prime Minister finished, it had disappeared from the trend list. But I was fully expecting a statement today. Mid-morning, I had been told. And when that didn't happen, I thought, well, the PM must be about to make a statement. But that didn't happen either. Who's leaking that there's going to be a royal statement and then there isn't?
I think there's obviously competing factions within the royal family. There's a lot of animosity, whether it's between Kensington Palace, Buckingham Palace, or with the Sussexes over in Montecito. I think there's a lot of bad blood that exists there. And yeah, we don't know about the health of Charles either. And this is another interesting thing, though, is people say it's not important. This is important. It really, really is. You cannot underestimate the amount of soft power the British monarchy still holds. And just remember, what on October the 7th, what did the first thing Charles do? Brought in the chief rabbi and told him that the people of this country stands with Israel. The royal family are a critical piece of the apparatus in the wider Zionist games at play, and massive supporters of the state of Israel, as is Prince William. You saw with his visit to the synagogue. So they are big, big players in that. And yes, in some ways it has taken minds and eyes off of Gaza, but I think anything that exposes the royals and as the liars and the hypocrites that they are, and if they're supporting this genocidal entity in the Middle East, I think that can only help the people of Palestine in their struggle.
Well, Her Majesty never did, of course. Israel was practically the only country in the whole world that she refused to visit. She never visited it. And I think that's because she could still hear the echo of the bomb that destroyed the King David Hotel and so many British servants of the crown with it. I've got to put this to you, David, because my editor insists that I do. And so I quote, on the 28th of January, Kensington Palace issued a statement saying Kate is recovering at home from planned abdominal surgery after 13 days in hospital. And web rumours are just that, rumour at the moment. There's no evidence to suggest William has been unfaithful and no evidence to suggest Kate is anything other than recovering at home. But we await a statement from Kensington Palace. Your response, please.
Well, they've been lying for months. And the fact that there needs to be the mention of William's extracurricular activities, I think says it all. And as we discussed last time, people think that royals are that they're just like you and me because the press brainwash you. It shows you like Kate visiting Asda and they're like, oh, she's just like me, you and me. They aren't. These people spend more money on a lunch than you would spend in an entire year. Okay. Or on a trip somewhere or a pair of earrings than you would see in a lifetime. Royals have affairs. Royals sire illegitimate children. They, for many of centuries murdered people. You can't, to think that they would just all of a sudden stop behaving like that. It's like if you domesticate a Rottweiler, they're not going to start just, you know, forgetting their instinct and forgetting who they are. So I think every statement that's come out of Kensington Palace is a lie. I mean, they've not even seen anything recently. And if it was a 3-week convalescence, if it was 3 weeks, then wait, where is she? We're now on the 20th of March. We are no further forward.
Jeff H. has got a new conspiracy theory. I'll put it to you, David. She's in the Glasgow Rangers trophy room with Lord Lucan and Shergar. Any truth to that one?
Well, it's perhaps been a bit bare recently, the Glasgow Rangers trophy room recently, but I'm sure she would still be noticed, as well as Lord Lucan as well.
David Clues, lead correspondent for UNN Unity Network News. Thanks very much indeed. Time for two calls at least. Robert in Humberside. Go ahead, Robert.
Good evening, George, and thank you for taking the call and congratulations to you, as everybody else has said to you over the past. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You do very good work. And I'm, 81 now, and I've watched your career during that time, and you're tremendous. However, today I was slightly concerned because I do believe the royal family's situation is private. And I think we need to keep it like that. I'm not happy with all the, what people believe is going to happen, et cetera, et cetera. They could well be true, but it's private to them.
Why do you say that, Robert, when we pay for it and they are our heads of state?
George, you and I won't agree with this. Whether we pay for it or not, whoever it was, it's private. It's something I've always believed in. I'm a great supporter of the King, and I am the supporter of the royal family. Now, I am of a coloured gentleman. I don't need to tell you, you don't need to really know that, but I am. But I'm very supportive. And when I was a little boy, King Charles, or at the time he wasn't the king then, I always felt so comfortable when he came round to visit people where the normal Caucasian, that wasn't the case.
Well, of course, that's a perfectly legitimate point of view, Robert. I wouldn't seek to dissuade you from it, but my own view is very clear. If you are paying millions to a family, actually scores of millions to a family, that they are worth billions as a result of the position they hold, when they are amongst the country's biggest landlords and earners, you have a right to know if something untoward is going on. You have at least the right to see their picture contemporaneously. That's my view. You have a different one. I take my hat off to you, and long may your lum reek, as we say in Scotland. Long life to you. Michael is in Dublin on the Irish Prime Minister standing down. Go ahead, Michael.
Good evening, George. Excellent show, as always. I'd like to make a few comments on Leo Varadkar standing down. Now, I won't undermine the credit that you gave to him for facing up to Genocide Joe when he went over there. That was good. That was good. And he did achieve quite a lot during his Taoiseachship. Now, the Fine Gael party have been at the forefront of the campaign to get Ireland to join NATO for the last nearly 30 years. So that's one thing that has to be taken into consideration. Another thing that has to be in consideration about Leo standing down, 10 of his TDs have announced that they won't run again. The Irish political scene is in a total ferment. It's affecting all the political parties. There will be a very large number of independents elected, like yourself, George, like yourself. Probably it might be inspired by your success, but there will be a huge number of independents elected in the next election. And his standing down is important what's going to happen to the major parties in four or ten weeks' time when the local elections come. I'm actually standing in the local election myself as an independent. And things are going to change around here big time. People are fed up. The referendum, the 75% of people who voted in the referendum against the government's proposal to take my mother out of the constitution. My God, it woke the whole country up when they put that proposal before us.
Well, sorry, I lost that last bit, Michael. But the truth is, if ever there were two cheeks of the same backside, it would have to be Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, who fought a phony war for 100 years, but between whom there is no substantial difference of any kind at all. You couldn't slip sixpence between these two cheeks. They are that close. They are a tightly clenched buttock. They are a tightly clenched anus. And out of the anus, you can only expect the kind of ordure that these two parties have dropped upon the great people of Ireland. Sinn Féin have lost a little bit of ground, but they are easily the largest party in the running in the elections, and I hope that they win. But I do hope that independents, by the score, are also elected to the European Parliament and to the forthcoming Dáil, which must surely soon be voted upon, and definitely in the local elections. I hope that Claire Daly and Mick Wallace get back to the European Parliament when these elections take place. And I believe that they will. Michael, thank you for the call. I need to make way for the legend that is Norma in Bristol. The last call of the evening. Norma, welcome.
Hello, George. I just wanted to make a comment quickly because I was listening to Loki. And although he is brilliant, it got a bit too complicated for me, all the ins and outs of everything. But what I do know, George, is that the USA and Netanyahu, etc., they're far too connected for any good solution to come out of Gaza and the Palestinians. You know, I mean, the forces of like greed and evil, they're too strong for the forces of good. And it's very sad. But that's my sort of comments, which is quite depressing.
Well, it's a good one. I do think that the interview with Loki probably requires and definitely merits a second viewing, a second, third and fourth viewing. Because, as is typical with him, his sheer genius is in tracing the links between this and that, between him and him, her and her. He's effectively drawing a word diagram which connects all the dots, and it repays careful study because the dots are all joined. These things that happen in different parts of the world, different parts of the country, are not random, disconnected phenomena. They are entirely connected, one with the other. And Loki is the man who not only can trace them, but can retain them in his head. No wonder he's able to remember all his songs. He connects them and he remembers them and he imparts them to you and me. And I personally feel greatly indebted to him for doing so. Thank you, Norma, for that. The last call. Alas, I've overshot again, and this is the end of the show. But the good news is, God willing, I'll be back again on Sunday at 7 p.m. UK time with the mothership, with the Sunday edition of the Mother of All Talk Shows. I'm staggered by the number of people now watching this show, watching the stream and watching the clips and spreading them, sharing them. This is a multi-million viewer show. It's the Mother of All Talk Shows. See you Sunday. God willing.